My name is Dr. Ariel Cohen. I've been the director of Russian and Eurasian program at the Heritage Foundation and also the International Energy Program there. Now I launched my own company called International Market Analysis. We are doing oil and gas and natural resources, risk assessments, business development, and public affairs. And this is an exciting business, is an exciting world because we're working in Avrasia, in Eurasia, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Ukraine, Russia, but also in the Eastern Mediterranean and Africa. And through business, I think we can improve the world. We can get people, give people opportunities and work and wealth as opposed to division and poverty and hatred.
Yeah, I would like to start with a topic that I just published an article in the Forbes magazine and gave an interview to Russian national television, and that is how the borders of the Middle East are changing. The borders as we know them today were not there forever. These are the borders that were first drawn by the British and French imperialists, diplomats, in 1916. The Sykes-Picot Agreement. And this was when the Allied powers were finishing the German and the Turkish-Ottoman arrangements in Europe and in the Middle East. So for a long time, this arrangement held. But we know that in Iraq, for example, it was the vilayat of the Ottoman Empire that was very different. The Kurds were in the north, the Sunnis were in the middle, and the Shia were in the south. So the United States, unfortunately, and some of U.S. Allies in the Gulf, Saudi and the Emirates of the Gulf, played a role in strengthening the Islamic state of Iraq and the Levant, the Sham. And this force is so extreme now that even Al-Qaeda disowned them and distanced from them and said it's Al-Nusra that is a real Al-Qaeda and Islamic State is not a real Al-Qaeda. But the matter of fact is that by having such an armed force that connects the Sunni population of Syria and of Iraq, it changes the border. And there are many implications for U.S. presence in the Middle East, for the oil and gas industry, something my firm, International Market Analysis, is specializing in, and for the countries. So how long Iraq is going to be a real country, question mark. What the interaction between Iran and Saudi Arabia, between Russia and Europe and the United States. So this is a huge crisis because the intervention of the United States in Iraq was not very successful. And then President Obama pulled. A lot of people tell me it makes things worse. The Shia don't agree with that. The Kurds don't agree with that. But I am not sure it's 3 trillion. I saw a little bit lower numbers. But nevertheless, it's over $1 trillion. It's still a huge number, okay? But what you see today is that the United States is pulling back under Obama, is pulling back from many areas. The area I specialize in and originally from is former Soviet Union, is Avrasia. I was born in Krim. So I said I missed my Ottoman citizenship only by 270 years. In that area, United States stepped back and thought that by being nicer to Russia, having lower level presence, Russia will be more friendly and feel less threatened. Instead, Russia stepped in. It was a vacuum that United States created. And boom, Russia steps in Georgia in 2008 and now in Ukraine. And you have Europe in the worst political crisis and security crisis since the end of the Cold War, maybe since 1945. So I always was a supporter of very strong Turkish-Israeli ties. I love Turkey, been in Turkey many times, visited, have friends in Turkey. And I think that both sides made mistakes. I think Turkey made a mistake, the government made a mistake, by supporting the Mavi Marmara mission in the beginning by allowing radical people on that ship. And Israelis made a mistake by, screwing up the military side of the operation by not signaling to Turkey that they think that the way the operation was handled was a mistake, maybe firing some senior officers.
To make it better, you have to resolve the Mavi Marmara, put it as, finish
it's
it.
Getting better. Put us,
yeah, but you have to finish it. So I am a big supporter of Turkish-Israeli ties, always was. Yeah. And there's so many things Israel and Turkey could do together. Remember, there was an initiative bringing water from Turkey to Israel. They decided not to do it. But today, there's an initiative by a friend of mine, Ambassador Matthew Breiza, to bring natural gas from the Israeli gas field in the Mediterranean to Turkey and then sell it to Europe via Turkey. So yes. Turkey would benefit as an energy hub.
Yes.
It would benefit in income from the transit fees. It's not going to happen as long as the relationship is not improved. Why it's not improved? It's not improved because the Mavi Marmara issue is not resolved yet. Both sides, in my view, need to recognize past mistakes. Mistakes were made on both sides. Put it to the end, pay the families, and put it in the past, and then move forward. And Israel as a hub of innovation, of high tech, Israel as a country with good security know-how, and Turkey could work together on these issues, on medicine, on tourism, on many, many things, and also in terms of cooperation in the region. Because the forces that are at play, that are inimical, are enemies of progress, enemies of Turkey, be it extremists like the Islamic State of the Levant, or Shia extremists that are connected to Iran, Lebanese Hezbollah that is fighting in Syria. All these people are extremists. They are against education. They're against economic science, development and science. And in that respect, I lived in Israel. I know the Israeli people very well. There is no deep feelings against the Turkish people. Israelis and Turks get along very well. And I think there's a huge potential, both economically in terms of tens of billions of dollars, and culturally and in terms of science and tourism and things like that. Yeah. So great potential. It would be a pity if politicians managed to derail it. Yeah. And also there's rumors and bad language that some people distribute about the Jews, and people repeat it and media repeats it. It has no base, okay? Jews do not eat babies. Even Egyptians, for example, now the more secular part of Egypt understands that the peace treaty that was signed in 1979 with President Carter, Anwar Sadat, and Menachem Begin is a good thing for Egypt. And this gas field that I mentioned to you before, Egyptians are thinking about buying that gas from the Israeli field called Leviathan for the benefit of Egypt. Also, Israel is so small it cannot possibly threaten Turkey. It is not a country that can have any kind of territorial demands on Turkey. It benefits from a relationship with Turkey. But also, by the way, please notice, in the last 5 years, there's a big change in the Middle East. And that is that the Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia, are reaching out to Israel. There's a much more business going on between the Gulf and Israel. So if Turkey in the past was the only game in town and Israelis had nowhere to go, now they actually are developing ties with Arabs. It's not just alliance with Israel. I agree with you that the military intervention in the end in Afghanistan, in Iraq, was not done well. There is a combination of factors, and you're absolutely right. Education is one of them. A more open-minded interpretation of religion. We're living in the 21st century. The economy is globalizing. Turkey is doing the right thing by integrating itself into the global economy. Other countries, maybe Pakistan, maybe Arab countries, do not do as much to educate their population, to have equality for women, to be more open-minded, to recognize that people of the book, be it Christians or Jews, can be partners and not enemies. Yeah. So in that respect, I think as we are moving into more modern society, society that is more scientific and based on technology and engineering, we need to recognize our commonalities. Yeah. We need to recognize where we can work together. And in terms of security cooperation, of course, Turkey can cooperate with the United States, with the Western European countries, and if necessary, with Israel as well. There are extremist currents in Christianity. There are extremist currents in Judaism.
Yes.
I was shocked. I was in a town called Bet Shemesh in Israel, which is not far from Jerusalem. And all of a sudden, I saw religious Jews and Jewish women put all in black, like the burqa in Afghanistan. I said, what is this? There's some crazy rabbi who decided that they need to wrap their women in black. Mm. And this is not something Judaism ever done. But now they're doing it because they're looking at the extremist Salafi Islam. And yeah, they don't even care about the pretty blue color that they do it in black. Yeah. So they're extremist people in many different religions. And I think the common ground for progressive and modern people, be it Turks, Americans, Europeans or Israelis, or for that matter, Indians and Chinese, is that we need to work together and we need to prevent conflict and resolve differences. There are always differences. The differences in business, the differences in economy, diplomacy, but this is where people can negotiate. That's where people can understand each other. So I think the fundamental dividing line in the 21st century is no longer between a Muslim and a Christian, or you know, a Jew and a Hindu. It is between people who understand that we are living in an interdependent world that can destroy itself if the evil intention prevails. Yeah. That with nuclear weapons, I was reading the other day about a specific bomb that caused a cobalt bomb, C-O-B-A-L-T, mm-hmm. cobalt, it's a radioactive metal, yeah, that if you explode enough of those, you can create so much radiation, you can destroy the planet, God forbid. So we understand that we have this power, and it's our choice. We can use our power for good,
yes,
or we can use our power for evil.
Right.
So the challenge to us from God is to use our power and our knowledge for good. And I have many friends who are Muslim. I have many friends who are Christian. I have many friends who are Jewish. That's not the point. The point is, are the people exercising their morality, their ethics? And a lot of sources of our morality and ethics comes from God, comes from religion. I'm not saying you have to exercise every, you know, 613 principles of Judaism or whatever, but you have to understand that the more good you do, the better world we're going to be living, and our children and our grandchildren, yeah, and that is the biggest challenge. But the problem, yeah, is what when we're talking about the Middle East, I lived in the Middle East, I think I know the Middle East, when the conflict is so nasty and so many people got targeted, so many people get killed, the ones with the skills, be it doctors like yourself or scientists or engineers, leave. So who is left there? The desperate people are left there, and then you desperate people create desperate situations. That's a tragedy in many places in the Middle East. Hopefully, Turkey will stay away from that and it will continue its economic growth, its cultural prosperity, and also tourism, which is very important. Yeah. But you also, at the same time, you don't want to be seen by some as a mouthpiece for the United States. You don't want to be seen as somebody who's too close or manipulated. So it is important to maintain your independent voice, but at the same time, you're absolutely right. And I must add that to think about that there is a monopoly on interpretation of Islam. There's no monopoly. There, you know, and it says, I think, in the Quran that nobody knows the ultimate truth. Only Allah knows the ultimate truth, right? So to come and say, my version or my interpretation is better than yours, that's also haram, I think. Right. At the same time, I think self-defense, this is where everybody agrees. If you recognize that somebody is about to shoot at you, and you shoot in self-defense, according to any law, and also most of religions, unless you're a Buddhist, you know, Jain, there's a religion in India that they don't even step on a bug because they don't want to take a life. But self-defense is something that can legitimately be argued that this is something you need to do if you know somebody's coming to put a bomb or shoot at you or whatever. I'll give you an example. There were three teenagers in Israel now kidnapped. And can you imagine?
People,
can you imagine how the mothers and the fathers, if God forbid somebody has their children, I have two children, God bless them. So if your children are being kidnapped, what the parents are feeling, they don't know if they're dead, if they're alive, where are they?
Innocent people.
And this is a tragedy because it happens again and again. It's going on now for 100 years. And this is something that a lot of people don't understand, this repeated violence against innocent civilians. And also Turkey suffered from terrorism a lot, including from PKK and from other, and it's going on. So people need to understand that, you know, your terrorist is not better than my terrorist. And we've seen, you know, coming from communists, the communists said that if you're from a different social class, or coming from the Nazis when they say you're from a different race, or coming from PKK, that you're Turk and not a Kurd. They are Marxist-Leninists, absolutely. But ISIS or ISIL is not. And in Syria, they sent a lot of East Germans from Communist Germany, East Germany, who worked in propaganda and education.